Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. You once again, I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Oh, good evening, everyone, and thank you for tuning in tonight with the NASCA show, Stop Child Abuse Now, scan number 2818, okay? Boy, what a night we have tonight. I'm telling you what, this is a special night. It's just a situation that I see that is extensive, it's unique, probably one of the best bios I have ever seen, and I've seen many, many bios, and this one is very unique in its way, and I can't wait to hear the story because it's just got so many features and aspects to it, and only, you know, only Jude could explain it to you, or, okay, so let her do it, and we're going to find out exactly how everything happened. This is so extensive, I can't wait. Before that, I also want to tell you a little bit about NASCA. NASCA is one of the greatest organizations on the planet. I mean, so many platforms, you know, to choose from. We have everything that anyone would ever need as far as programs, news articles, anything you need. So NASCA is the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse, Child Abuse Trauma Prevention, Intervention, and Recovery are our purposes, at NASCA, and to address issues related to childhood abuse, trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so with only two goals, okay? So the first goal is educating the public. And I think that's what we do on the highest level that anybody could ever have, especially as related to helping society get over its taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse. Presenting facts, showing child abuse to be a pandemic, worldwide problem that, affects everyone. The second purpose is actually offering hope and healing, okay, which is so important, after and people grow up and they have, certain issues with PTSD and anxiety and depression and everything like that. But there's, numerous paths, okay, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information that anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery, okay? So, I do want to, thank Jude M. for calling in tonight from South Carolina. The very unique situation. And also, before that I introduce her, I want to give you the call-in number for tonight. If anyone that's listening and wants to call in and ask questions or you have a comment or anything like that, you can call area code 646-595-2118, okay? And also go to NASCA.org. You can pull it up there and listen there, okay? So here we go. I can't wait for this because I tell you what, this is so unique in its own way. And I'm just going to take my time because I'm going to tell you the way this bio is written, I just want to express it and make sure that I get this out because it is so unique, and I want to make sure that I do it specifically for the cause tonight. It's beautiful. Let me just say that, okay? So, you know, tonight's special guest is Jude M., a transgender man who grew up in the southern United States in Mormon military family. Jake's mom has a histrionic personality disorder and suffered from severe postpartum from Jake's sister's birth when he was 8. Okay? So she spent most of his childhood either in bed ignoring the world or professing her histrionic tendencies by leveraging her children's problems for attention with her church colleagues, okay? So, you know, just stay with me on this because it's so interesting. It just gets better and better, you know? And Jake raised his much younger sister, okay, and was responsible for all of her accounts. Jake's father has narcissistic personality disorder and was in the military until Jake's senior year in high school. And now because of this, he was rarely home. And when he was physically violent with Jake's older brothers and their pets. Wow. And was verbally dominating as a narcissist to everyone. Okay. So Jake's father also molested him when he was around 11 years old. And when Jake told his mom about the molestation, she laughed audibly, you know, and told him to never mention it again. So over the years, Jake also found childography and a number of chat conversations with sex workers on his dad's laptop. Okay? On his laptop. Oh, my. And Jake's older brothers were physically violent with him, you know, as well as his parents and their own intimate partners over the years. So one brother is diagnosed as a sociopath, and the other has really no official psychiatric diagnosis whatsoever. But, you know, from age 8, Jake spent most of his childhood, you know, running every aspect of the household. Then as an adult, Jake faced disownment, homelessness, spousal rape. Listen to this, okay? Spousal rape and being held hostage by his ex-spouse. Whoa. I mean, being stalked by that spouse. There was divorce and poverty. And he also, you know, has autism, PTSD, OCD, BPD, ADHD, and is multiple disabled and chronically ill. But, however, okay, listen to this. This is how strong this is. It's because I know that feeling. If you are chronically ill, and I'm there myself, I am disabled because of the things that happened to me, is that now he runs his own business, okay, automating small businesses, tech for other entrepreneurs, and is an LGBTQ activist in his community, okay? So, with, you know, no further ado, I really want to thank Jude for calling in tonight. This is going to be a wonderful night. So I want to bring her in. Hello, Jude.
Hi.
Hi, Jude. How are you?
Good to be here. I'm good. How are you?
Awesome. That's great. Great. I want to thank you so much for being here tonight. What an extensive story this is. You know, there's so many aspects to it. Is that, you know, we have a lot to talk about and a lot to go through because this is really interesting, you know, and I can't wait to hear your story. So this is your night, okay? And I want you to say and do anything you want to do because I can't wait to hear this. This is so beautiful. The story is, it's wow. I mean, so you know, if you want to, you know, usually we start out, you know, from the early years and, you know, maybe go up to, you know, around 10 or 12, something like that. And then, you know, from like the middle school and then from then on, from high school on up or something like that, we'll kind of break it up into like three different categories of like the age time, you know, what happened to you through these years and, you know, what's happened to you. And if you have anything, you know, that you want to say to the public, you know, so this is your night. And I just want to thank you so much for being here. Okay.
Happy to be here.
Yeah, and I know NASA would really appreciate it because every time somebody comes on, you know, you're helping so many people, you know, by sharing your story. And that's the most important thing, that we get the education that you went through. You know, we need to know.
Absolutely.
Especially this kind of story, okay? So, you know, if you want
Absolutely.
To, you can just start out, you know, at any age you want to and just kind of work up from there and explain your story.
Yeah. So, like you said, I'm transgender. My pronouns are he and him. I was born in the South, I wasn't born in the South. I was born in Wyoming, but my dad was military, so I spent most of my childhood in the South, in the U.S.
Uh-huh.
Around when I was about 8 and a half, my sister was born, and that was kind of a surprise to everyone. We were actually about to adopt a little girl who was 7, and my mom found out she was
really?
Pregnant.
Wow.
Yeah, and that was so we weren't permitted to adopt at that time just because they didn't want a new kid and a new baby in the same house, and in my opinion that turned out to be a good thing because my mom had really, really severe postpartum depression. And had already been dealing with mental health stuff anyway.
Mm-hmm.
When she was born, I just kind of took over. My mom used to joke that every mom should have a 9-year-old to help them when they giving birth and have a baby. And that kind of rang true because I changed the diapers, I did the feedings, I did the housework. I did the laundry and the cooking and the cleaning, and I learned to care for a house from age 8.
Mm-hmm.
I did everything to make sure that the house was clean for when CPS would come over and check on us to make sure that we didn't get taken away. And I was in charge of cooking for my whole family of 6. And I did some of the grocery shopping as well. Pretty much the only thing I didn't do was finances. So that was, you know, 8, 9, 10. I was in a magnet school, so that's in the South, that's for the gifted kids to do academic and arts. And I actually had ulcers in 5th grade just because of the stress of that, as well as my home life. And my sister was like a little toddler at the time. But I had ulcers, and that was when I started to get sick really frequently. And I was throwing up a lot. And looking back now, I know that a lot of it was because of the abuse. Like I started wetting the bed, even though I was like 11, out of nowhere. And now I know that that is a symptom of when you are being sexually abused and such. But
absolutely.
I didn't know at the time, obviously.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
That is one of the main keys that I know of that everybody basically went through for sure. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
That's wonderful. Yeah, keep going. I can't wait to hear this because it gets so good, you know.
At that time, my brother, I have 2 older brothers. They're 3 and 5 years older than me. And they now live across the country. I haven't spoken to them in many years because they are the last. Am I allowed to curse on this show?
If you can hold it down to a minimum, we can understand, you know, what it is. Cause,
you're good. let's just say that the last thing that each of my brothers said to me contained the F-bomb and told me to go F myself and kill myself. So I don't speak to them because I don't really talk to people who tell me to go kill myself for obvious reasons.
But, you know, you know, that's one of the things, that we talk about a lot here is to stay away from the negative as much as possible. And that is the worst of the negative right there, you know. Okay.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, they both told me this right after I had actually committed suicide. So that was just a cherry on top, the timing. I literally, this was later down the road, but when we were kids, they, for example, my oldest brother was, at church they decided, they kind of deemed him the troubled teenager, really, but he was much more than that. He was very physically violent. He consistently would throw chairs at me and my sister, and he pulled a gun on my dad at one point. It was like a pellet gun. It wasn't a real gun, but still.
Right.
One point he got kicked out because my dad actually kicked him out of the house because of the pellet gun incident. He stayed with our bishop for a little bit. And then my other brother has tried. He would have been about 17.
About 17. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was about 12. And right around that time as well, my other brother tried to kill me twice. The first time was he was babysitting, sort of. When I say that my brothers were babysitting, it means that I was watching my sister and they were playing video games. So there's that. But when I was trying to call my mom to see if I could just stay up until she got home, and he snatched the phone from me, and this was at the time that we had corded phones attached to the wall for all y'all youngins out there, and he threw the phone, broke the phone, and choked me around the neck until I passed out, and he assumed I was dead and just left me there and went and played video games the rest of the night. I gouged out. Yeah, I gouged out tracks in his elbow because my mom had taught me to defend myself against people who are not my family because she lives in her rosy world where we're all happy family. But I reached out and I gouged out his elbow to make him let go, and he let go. And I told my mom the next day, and she just made him say he was sorry to me, and that was it. And I remember sharpening my fingernails in case he did it again. And then the other time was he got in a fist fight with me and just tried to kill me out in our side yard and left me for dead. So
A true
he's trying
fist
to kill me a few times
he was,
now.
He was hitting you with his fists and everything? I mean, just straight out?
Yeah. He was throwing stuff at me. He threw like a trash bin at my head. And same brother actually had a sword collection, so that was terrifying for me. Yeah, he collected them.
I hear that, boy. Yeah, that tells me a lot right there for sure, you know.
Yeah, that's one of the things. Shortly after that diagnosis, I was a sociopath. Antisocial personality disorder, and then I believe he's also on the spectrum, but I don't think he's ever been diagnosed. But he does not have remorse for much of anything, if anything, and that's part of that disorder. I had a very good friend at the time, Alicia, still my best friend to this day. And we would, when my brothers were on a war path or my dad was home and would be causing fights and such, I would take my sister and we would leave through our bedroom window and go over to Alicia's house. So we had that kind of refuge over at her house. And if it got really bad, we would go over there. But I remember I had a strip of carpet that we had left over from renovations, and I would go, and when I knew things were about to go down and fists were about to be flying, I would take my sister and lock my bedroom door, and we would play with Barbies, and I turned the big stereo that I had all the way up so that she didn't know what was happening. And it's honestly still one of my proudest things as an adult. She doesn't remember it. She doesn't remember
That's wonderful.
Most of it. Yeah, mm-hmm. I successfully shielded her sometimes with my body. But she is
unbelievable.
My absolute joy in life. I'm so proud of her. She's brilliant. She's going to be a physical therapist, and she's a licensed EMT now. She's just a wonderful, wonderful person. And the fact that she remembers playing Barbies with me, and she remembers the things that I did to prevent her from knowing what was going on outside of her purview, but for the most part does not remember the abuse that we dealt with, which is good, in my opinion.
That's absolutely
that's around
wonderful.
12, so that gets to middle school there.
Wow, that is extensive right there. It really is. I mean, there's so much abuse right there already that, you know, by that time you've already taken in so many things in the future, you know, that's going to be damaging, you know. And the same thing happened to me, too.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand exactly where you're coming from, you know, because, you know, I have spine diseases. You know, we all have spine diseases. You know why? Because we were traumatized, you know. And when you live through the trauma, let me tell you something. It's basically called brain damage if you really want to know what it is. Okay, let's just get down to
it. Oh, yeah,
it
alters the way that your brain forms.
Yep.
It literally alters your brain from a young age because your brain is still so plastic that you learn that whatever you're going through is normal, even though it's not. And so I didn't recognize that I dealt with any abuse until I was in college and was talking to my my friends, and they were like, that's not normal. So I didn't actually realize until I was much, much older.
Well, you know, that's basically coming on with, like, repressed memories, you know. I've heard of people having those, 40 years later, 30 years later, you know. You never know.
It seems normal when you're going through it. That's all I had ever known, so just... That was just normal to me. Like I remember would tell people about stuff and just be laughing. Like, for example, when my brother was about 15, he mouthed off to my mom in the kitchen and she literally hit him in the face with a cast iron pan. And like, that's something that you see in like cartoons where, you know, like the characters will whack each other with a pan.
Right.
And so I would talk about that and just be like laughing and be like, it was so funny, huh? And then the people I was telling were like, that's not okay. So that was really...
That's a weapon. That is a weapon, and I could kill
growing
somebody.
Growing up, it was like, ha-ha, that's funny. Yeah. Yeah.
So let me ask you this. What about the pets? Because I'm a pet lover. I have so many pets, I'm telling you. I'm not going to get into that. But what about the pets? Tell me about that.
At one point we had 12 hamsters, 10 spiny mice, a bunch of fish, a bunch of snakes from the backyard. We lived in the sticks. We brought home turtles and puppies and cats and everything. But we had, this was when I was in Montgomery, actually, Alabama, and we had at the time 3 dogs and 2 cats, I think. And I just remember when my dad would get in fistfights with my brothers, my dog would come up and try to get in the middle of it to defend. And he would kick the dog so hard that the dog would go flying through the air, hit the wall, and then come down the wall and run off. But I remember that because that was the sweetest dog I've ever had in my entire life.
Wow.
But he would kick it into the air and against the wall.
So I think
the only time I actually hit my dad back was when he kicked my dog across the room. I actually ran in and started hitting him. So
did
I was about
really?
10,
wow.
I think.
Yeah,
I was pissed.
Unbelievable.
Angry.
Unbelievable. So, you know, with his narcissistic personality disorder, okay, you think that the military has a lot of impact on that situation. How do you feel about that?
I think, and obviously this is my personal experience, I don't, you know, place this on anyone
mm-hmm.
else, but in my case, and I know, okay, so when I reported my dad for molesting me, I was 19, and I was living
mm-hmm.
in Idaho, and he was living in Virginia, and the abuse had happened in Montgomery, Alabama. And so because we were military and we had moved so much, there was not actually anyone with jurisdiction over it. So the Montgomery police couldn't handle it because we didn't live there anymore. But the
right.
police in Virginia would not handle it
mm-hmm.
Other than as a report, but not, you know, for charges because it didn't happen
right.
there. And so for us, mm-hmm. because we were military and we moved so much, it almost made it easier on my dad and my parents in general because
right.
we were never in one place long enough to nail anything down. And then also on top of that, when you are a military family, there's almost this hero complex that our nation has for that to where, you know, people can do no wrong. And you know, people assume that a military family is just a loving family, and then on top of that, we were Mormon, so we're in the Deep South and we're Christian. And so when I did tell adults about what had happened, the general response that I would get was lying. Be grateful for your loving family. Not everyone has such a good family. Don't lie on your family
mm-hmm.
and don't be such a little, you know, butt.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So even when my brother choked me, for example, and I had handprints on my neck from it.
Uh-huh.
I went to school and they sent me to my teacher asked me what happened. And I told her, I said, my brother choked me out last night. And
mm-hmm.
She sent me to the counselor, and the counselor was like, you know, you shouldn't lie, and you have a loving family. Your family's wonderful and amazing, and you should be grateful for what you have, because not every kid has a family like yours that loves them and is so pleasant and well off, you know? So I think that there's like a perception that comes with military, Christian, white picket fence families that way.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, that's one of the biggest issues, I think, that ever happened in the past, things went wrong, you know. It was the self-policing that everybody did, you know.
Yeah.
They tried to handle it themselves, and, you know, they just didn't listen. They didn't pursue,
yeah.
you know, and they looked at it as nothing, you know, where,
yep.
you know, when people do that, they're destroying lives right there, you know, right
mm-hmm.
there. And that's where,
I mean,
know,
by the time I was,
stop.
Yeah, by the time I was in high school, I just stopped telling people because I just had this assumption
mm-hmm.
that I was not going to be believed,
mm-hmm.
but why should I bother,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm. So
it just
so
rained crap
on
my head, so why should I bother? I just live with it.
Uh-huh. So tell me about middle school. That had to be very interesting for you, huh? I mean, how did things go for you?
Middle school was an interesting time in general for me, actually. So I went to
uh-huh.
10 schools in K through 12. I went to 10 different schools K through 12. So I
wow.
was not in the same school I went to a different school every single year from second grade
uh-huh.
to 11th grade. The first time I was in the same school
mm-hmm.
for 2 years was my senior year. And I actually went to the same school as my little sister. We went to a very, very small private school that year for my seventh
mm-hmm.
grade year. And this was shortly after my dad had molested me. Can I back up to that?
Yeah.
So,
yes, absolutely.
My mom had spent my entire life, and for all of us kids, she had professed that all the time she would just tell us, you know, no matter who it was, if somebody touches you inappropriately, even if it's my uncle, even if it's my brother, no matter who it is, if it's the bishop, just tell me and we'll deal with it and I'll believe you. And so what actually happened with that was I we were getting ready for church in the morning. So it was Sunday morning, mm-hmm. and I had right. just crawled in bed with my mom and dad to get, like, snuddles. Normal. Mm-hmm. And yep. my mom got up to take a shower for church, and my at that mm-hmm. point, my dad spooned me and started grinding against me from behind and was, like, grabbing my chest and sniffing me, and
oh.
all that happened. And so I froze at the time because I didn't know what to do because it was my dad.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. so I got up and I got ready for church, and I was just filled with terror, and I got in the car, and I made sure that I was in the car with just my mom that time to go to church. So we took two cars mm-hmm. that day, and I made sure I was only one in the car with my mom. And she had mm-hmm. always told me to just let her know. So I told her what happened, and she literally just chuckled. She just went, like, literally just laughed. And she told me that she would talk to my dad about it, which was not the response I wanted to hear, because here she's going mm-hmm. to go confront him about it at church in front of me. And by the time that we got back in the car, I still don't know if she ever actually confronted him at the time, because
mm-hmm.
later on he was saying, you thought I was this monster this whole time, but you never said anything. So I don't know if she actually told him that I said something or not, but after church, she told me she had dealt with it and that Dad was probably just asleep and mistook me for her, even though she was 300 pounds and I was, like, 90 pounds. There was no way that anyone would mistake me for her.
No way. No way.
Yeah, so she said that it was probably that, and that she had handled it, and that it was fine, and not to talk about it anymore ever after that. And I didn't mm-hmm. tell a single soul until I was in college. So that was
really?
That, and
wow.
honestly, that was
uh-huh.
that moment when she laughed in my face. I've made sure that I have never needed her since. From mm-hmm. that moment in my life on, I made absolutely certain that I never needed anyone ever again. That was the point at which I trusted no one anymore, and I
mm-hmm.
made sure that I never needed a soul other than myself, you know? And I know,
that's
common for people to have that moment.
Oh, absolutely. That's me. I mean, you're absolutely explaining my life, too, you know, as you go, basically,
yep.
with that, you know? It's common for us when we go through the things that we did, and we have a lot in common, I can tell you, okay? So
you grow up
I'm
fast,
just,
and you learn to take care of yourself.
Oh, yeah. Real quick, you know? And,
yeah.
And that's the only thing that I think kept me going, too, you know, was having to do that, you know, because there was no
yep.
other way to survive, okay? Period.
Oh, yeah.
Period. That was it.
If you needed anyone,
you
could always be let down. But if you only need yourself,
yep.
you're always there, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And honestly, if not for my sister, I don't think I would be here now. You know, if I didn't have that responsibility
mm-hmm.
of caring for her and loving her, and
mm-hmm.
she's essentially
mm-hmm.
my kid, I, you know,
mm-hmm.
I have been through
how many,
it as well.
How many years younger?
How many years younger was she? She's 9 years.
9 years.
She's
wow.
9 years younger.
That's
similar
to my brother. Actually, he's a little bit older, 11 years, you know. So, yeah.
Wow.
I mean,
yeah.
I know that difference there. Yeah, it's like almost like having a kid, you know.
It is.
It's just that.
Yeah,
I was a kid
raising
right?
a kid.
Yeah.
It is.
Right,
it really is like that. Like, I know some other people
uh-huh.
who've dealt with that, too, and it's a kid raising
uh-huh.
a kid. I mean, I went to all of her mommy and me things while she was growing up. I went to all the mom tea, the mommies for tea, and all her parent conferences. I bought her first bras. I took her shopping for shoes because my parents always forget to buy
mm-hmm.
her clothes. Like, I have taken care of her since I was 9 years old.
Well, the way I look at it, you know, if you're the one that's taking care of her, then she is going to be on. Because I'll tell you what, you know, you have your, you know what, together. I can tell. You know, you're very precise.
Oh, yeah.
You're accurate. You, you know, you're on demand, and if she's learning anything from you, I can tell you what, right now, she's going to be just fine, you know. And she needed that.
Amazing. Yep.
You know?
She's a wonderful, wonderful person. When she was about 15, she was telling me, you know, how much she hated my parents and stuff, and I was like, well, make sure that you don't ever have to go home. And at that point, she certified as an EMT at age 15.
Uh-huh.
Isn't that terrifying? A 15-year-old can be EMTs.
Unbelievable.
But she made sure she would never have to go home if she didn't want to. And, you know, that was my advice to her, was get out and don't ever go back.
Yeah. But I tell you what, with her having,
yeah.
It sounds like goals. Her goals are on. You know, that's what I see,
yeah.
and that's very impressive. It really is, considering
she's very,
everything.
Very driven.
Really?
She sets out to do something, and she just does it. She's very driven, and she's very passionate about what she does, and she is an absolute superstar. So I'm proud of her.
That's great.
Every damn day.
Yeah, that is
every,
great.
Sorry.
Well, I know you are. I could feel it. You understand me? Not only you telling me that, I can feel it inside, because I know that there's nothing but love right there, you know. I'm telling you.
She is an absolutely fantastic human being.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we kind of left off. Did you want to talk anything else about the molestation with your dad that you left out? Because that's where we were last time.
I will say that because I told my mom, and looking back, I think he knew that I told her, because he never touched me again.
Never again at all?
Nope. And I think it was because he knew I would tell. And so that's like my advice to anyone that's listening. If you're going through that, tell somebody, because that is so powerful. In terms of, especially with him, because he is a narcissist and he has to control everyone's perception of him, he doesn't want anyone talking bad about him. And so I think that, you know, he had other outlets and such, but as soon as he knew I was going to yap about it, he didn't touch me.
Yeah, you know what's so sad about that is that he did that to you, and he used as much as time as he could to the extreme, you know, until he was going to get busted for doing it. And that is just so sickening right there. Because you know what it shows?
It is
shows
exactly
they know what
like
they're doing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's
exactly
what it is. And they all have a plan, and they know when to quit, because they stretch it to the absolute limit. And that's exactly what happened with my case, too.
That's going to come up later in what I talk about, because when I turned him in, because my sister was 11 and I didn't want him touching her, it's her story to tell, but he did things to her as well. And the second that I turned him in and he knew that people were watching out, he never touched her again either. So there was that again. He knew when to stop, because you do what you can get away with, and when you don't think you can get away with it, you know exactly when to stop, because you don't get in trouble.
Yep. But see, that's
and
the
with
thing
the military thing too. Yeah.
Oh, the military thing. That is just God. How do you even try to
so
absorb
many
that? Yep. Because there is. It's a consistent.
So many barriers because of it.
Yep.
Like,
so many cracks
for example,
the way.
When I turned him in, when I turned him in, the police guaranteed me that they would never tell him that it was me that turned him in. But he pulled his colonel card, because he's a lieutenant. He was a lieutenant colonel, and there's that camaraderie in law enforcement and military and all of those authority figures, and he was, you know, pulled his colonel rank, and they played the tape where I had called the police. They played the tape for him, and that was how he found out that it was me that turned him in. And they were mm-hmm. that was literally illegal for them to do, but all he had to do was go, "Hi, I'm Colonel," you know?
Yep,
Colonel such
yep.
and such. And so he can get what he wants and then, you know, right. do whatever he wants because he just pulls rank, essentially.
Yeah, authority figure, you know? And that's the same
mm-hmm.
thing basically that happened with me, but it wasn't in the military. It was through the Archdiocese. It's almost identical in its own
oh, yeah.
aspect, you know? It's so sickening to
my
me.
Wife
you know,
is
I can so understand,
yeah.
you know, what went on with that. You know, I can only imagine
oh,
what
yeah.
you were going through, you know? Wow. I mean,
I knew from a young age that no one was going to believe anything I said, you know, because between
yeah.
him pulling rank and my mom controlling the narrative in whatever way she
right.
wanted it to turn out to look like, you know, there it was.
Yeah, you see, they have credibility, you know, they already above
oh, yeah.
us, you know, as being accountable.
On their teachers
and,
as well.
And have, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, with the teacher cred, they get a lot of teacher cred because, you know, these are the people that care for our kids and you know, they're responsible and this and that. Yeah.
Yep.
So, and my mom's
so
very good
like,
at controlling the narrative.
So you said you went to 10 different schools too, huh?
I did.
You know, that's ironic because I was not that many, but I wasn't far behind you. I went to 6, you know, and
yeah.
but you were military, you know, where mine,
mm-hmm.
and let me just tell you real quick what happened to me was that I lived in the community where I was molested in school through the Archdiocese, right? Well,
mm-hmm.
I had left because of the situation, but I wanted to get back into the school with my friends, right, that I was growing up with.
Yeah.
I missed them all.
Oh, yeah.
So what happened, but we took on the Archdiocese back in 1978, okay? Back then, you didn't do it because the Archdiocese
oh, yeah.
was so powerful. You know, no families wanted to associate with. I lost all my friends. But by the time I
oh,
was
yeah.
about 12, 13, I wanted to try to get back into the system. Well, you know what? Everybody shut me out. They isolated me. They
yep.
turned their shoulders on me, but there was nobody there for me. And it really destroyed
oh, yeah.
my life. It really did. So I wound up going to 6 different schools because of that, you know. So,
yep.
you know, how – and you are very educated, I can tell. So how was your education, you know, dealing with 10 different schools? How did you maintain, you know, the different systems?
Similar to you, I actually didn't move that much during K through 12. I only moved, would have been twice. So I actually,
mm-hmm.
I went to 10 different schools, but I actually only moved twice during that time. I switched schools quite a bit. Yeah, yeah. So similar to you, you know, I switched schools when I was having emotional problems and then I couldn't
mm-hmm.
get back into that school. You know, I went to different magnet schools, and I went to different public schools, and then I went to private school, and I actually went to a boarding school for part of my high school years. And,
uh-huh.
you know, I went to different places, and then I was so emotionally disturbed at the time that most of them, you know, didn't want me back. So, but switching states was quite a trick because of we don't have like a national
mm-hmm.
school system, so like going from South Carolina to Alabama was like repeating a grade. And when I went from Alabama to Virginia, I was floundering because Virginia is so much higher than Alabama.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I know because
but it
did I actually
make...
lived right there.
Yep. A nightmare.
Yep.
I was suddenly going from straight A's to struggling for B's and C's, and just
mm-hmm.
it was a terror going from Alabama to Virginia, because I went from some of the worst schools in the country to some of the best schools in the country up there.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I'm just going to straight out tell you that I didn't make it all the way, okay, and I couldn't. I tried so hard, you know, but I got left behind in school. I bounced around. I finally found a small private school. You know, I think I had, maybe 17, 18 students that graduated. That's it for my senior class, you know.
Yeah.
And it was that kind of school, and it was the last resort for me. And I actually stepped up and did pretty good after, I have to say. You know, I did a lot of work in my life, though. Yeah, and you have to realize, too, I got 45 years, you know, behind me on the situations that we live with, you know. And that's why I can really be so empathetic with everything that's happened to you, you know, and imagine what you've been through, man. God almighty. It's just so much to deal with, you know.
It's like an escape for me, and that's really what I credit it with. Like, I think because I didn't have friends. Either when I was younger, it was because my sister was always with me. And, you know, like, 9-year-olds don't want to hang out with a newborn. So I lost a lot of friends that way, and I didn't really have any friends because I was I just didn't have friends because of my home life and such, and because of my sister, mm-hmm. I was raising her. And so my friends were the teachers. I hung out in the library, and I hung out in the orchestra room. And so the only, like, what I credit with my success for K-12 was really my only support system at the time was my teachers. And so they kind of dragged me through it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you were very fortunate, you know, to be in that situation, I'll tell you. A lot of kids wouldn't have that opportunity. You were very, very fortunate. Absolutely, yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm still I'm still friends with some of my teachers from high school, and it is really nice to have talked to them and told them my real story since. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, how did they perceive that? I mean, first told them.
So it was interesting because most of them knew something was going on at the time. And so they kind of just allowed me space to be safe with them, but they didn't press me on it, and I didn't really – at that point I knew, you know, there was no use talking about it. So they just created these safe spaces for me in high school where I could just come whenever I wanted, skipping class or not, and sit in their room.
Right.
And by the, it's a little hairy because my mom was a teacher at my high school that I graduated from. And so, you know, this is their coworker that they have known personally. It's not like some random mom that they've never met.
Wow. I had no idea.
To their credit, they just outright believed me. And they said, you know, we knew something was going on at the time because we could tell that you were in distress. But, like, we had no idea what it was. You know, I've been very fortunate with them believing me in that way.
Yeah.
Because not everyone did. So it's been really cool to be friends with them as an adult and be able to tell my real story and talk to them about their lives and stuff. And they've been very encouraging and close. So.
That is so beautiful to hear, you know, and I just want to personally say, you know, from NASCA that I want to just commend them for what they did, okay, because that is so beautiful, because, you know, this is what the world needs. We need people just like them, you know, and if you're still friends with them and after everything that you've been through and they were there for you, now you know who your friends are, you know, that's what our life is. And we have to deal with that every single day. In the beginning, it's hard, right? But in the end, though, you know, when you have these beautiful people that are truly your friends and they understand and they, you know, were there for you, that is everything. That you know, the transparency and the closure that you know, as survivors, that we need, you know, and that's why it's so beautiful.
I'm so incredibly blessed with my chosen family. I've had people who've taken me in over the years and cared for me and fed me and taken me in when I would have been homeless and looked out for me. I have a beautiful, beautiful, who I call my real parents, Ken and Denisa. They live in Montgomery, and they took me in when I was in boarding school. And I just ate up all their food and slept on their couch and ruined their couch. And I've done so since. And they love me. They are wonderful, wonderful people. And I have my wife and my sister and my good, good friends that are my chosen family. And that's one of the most important messages that is out there. Like, blood makes you related. Loyalty and love make you family.
Yeah, exactly.
You get to choose your own family. That's the thing. You do actually get to choose your own family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's very powerful.
And you know, it is. I mean, that is the absolute core of the truth right there, is what it gets down to, you know. And without the love, you know, and that's what it really is about, is that, you know, there is nothing else, you know, because what is the main thing that we all have a problem with issues with the other people? It's trust, you know, that word right there.
I truly did not believe that unconditional love existed until the day that I told Denisa what had happened to me, that I had been molested and that I was queer. So at the time I was still presenting female. I hadn't come out as trans, but I told her that I loved women and that I had been molested as a child and been abused by my parents. And up to that point, when I told her that, everyone that I had told, no one had believed me to that point, like literally no one. Everyone, you know, said, oh, your mom will be on your side. And I was like, no, she won't. And she was not. She has sided with my dad since the dawn of time and never will do anything else. And so I told her, and in my heart, I expected her to turn me away. I expected her to say, don't lie, be grateful, because that was the only thing I had ever heard in my whole life. And her response was, well, I love you, and I'm glad you told me. Thank you for trusting me. And so that, like, I'm pretty sure I broke down crying because I had never had anyone embrace me when I had expressed my queerness and my background to that point. No one had believed me that knew my family and me, if that makes sense. Like, other people would believe me, but they'd never met my family. Denisa knew my family and knew me and still believed me anyway. And that was the first time that I understood that there was nothing I could possibly do to make her not love me, and that she truly loved me unconditionally and still does. And so that was like one of those powerful moments of my life, honestly.
Well, I'm glad you experienced that. You know, I really am, because, you know, so many people that go through that never do. You know, it's the reverse. So you are absolutely lucky and privileged, and I'm glad that happened to you. I really am. You know, it's a blessing.
I'm still connected, but I can't hear you.
Can you hear me okay?
Can you hear me at all?
Hello? Oh, yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me? Hello?
I'm going to hang up and call back in if that's okay.
Yeah.
Can you hear me now?
Oh, yes, I can hear you fine. Can you hear me?
Sorry about that. I think my car disconnected for whatever reason.
can you hear me okay now?
Did you hear? Yeah, I can hear you now.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
Okay, I don't know what happened. Oh. Yeah.
Yeah. What was the last thing that you heard me say?
With your mom.
Yeah. With Denisa.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that was the first time I understood that unconditional love really exists, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's been a big, huge part of your life, hasn't it, for the people that are actually still, you know, really in your life, huh? And that's,
yeah,
that's kind of the same for a lot of us that way. It's amazing how that works, you know. And
it's really hard to trust.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's
yeah,
always an issue with everything. And at the end, you know, and down the road, you do discover, you know, who and what not to trust, you know. And I think that's the biggest thing,
oh, yeah,
is that we're always on that negative side of trust. And it doesn't,
yep,
matter. We're just fixed over there, you know. It's,
yeah,
a permanent fix.
Well, and I am
it's
part of I'm part of the statistic, you know, I'm part of the statistic where I grew up and married someone who was abusive to me too, because when you grow up in that environment, your brain,
mm-hmm,
comes to realize or comes to expect that is the only quote unquote love that you will ever get. And so as adults, we tend to accept abuse in a way that people who were not abused as children generally don't. So there's actually like that statistic that we grow up and to be abused again. So I'm part of that statistic. And it took me a long time to figure out who to trust and how to trust in that way.
Mm-hmm. You know, and that's really the truth of it all. The same for me is that after my situation, you know, I moved, okay, 800
miles. Oh, yeah,
miles
I've moved 50
away.
Times. Yep.
You know, and I'm serious. I mean, and you can understand, you know, what you know, that is, because a lot of us do that. I had to,
mm-hmm,
you know, I couldn't be in the same,
yep,
in the same area. There's no way. I needed peace.
No.
I needed,
gosh,
somebody, you know, nobody I knew that knew. I just needed to get away, and I wound up,
yep,
going away for 15 years, you know. Yep.
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 I have moved 50 times. I only moved 12 times before I was 18, and I've moved, that makes 38 times since I've been an adult, just because I just bounced around trying to,
mm-hmm,
escape a little bit.
Bam. You know, that's all we can do, you know, sometimes when we have, you know, such anxiety in the area that,
mm-hmm,
that you know, these things are going on with, and we can't handle, you know, the pressure of being there. It's just triggering, you know, and that's the,
yep,
thing about a lot,
especially
of it.
With,
you get away from these triggers, you know, and that's what it's all about, you know, to just find,
yep,
love and peace, you know.
Especially with, you know, narcissists and people who are very manipulative, because if you are close by, they will find a way to get to you.
Oh, absolutely.
For
absolutely.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you know, later on, you know, in your life when you were, you know, going into college and stuff, how did things, you know, kind of change for you that way?
So I went to a college. My now wife, who is absolutely wonderful and the love of my life, was actually my freshman roommate in college. We went to the same,
uh-huh,
university up in Arlington, Virginia. And then
okay,
I moved across the country for my sophomore year. That was when I went to Idaho from Virginia. So like you said, I kind of,
wow,
fled. And I went to a very religious school. I went to BYU, Idaho. And so,
uh-huh,
I could not be really out as queer, and I could not, you know, live my truth, essentially. So I was,
mm-hmm,
still in a very much in an environment where I couldn't really explore who I was and become me. And
right.
So, and at that point was when I reported my dad for molesting me as a child, because my sister was 11 and I didn't want him,
uh-huh,
to do it to her. And I knew that
you when you went,
I knew,
reported it?
Mm-hmm. I was 19.
When you,
yep,
reported him? Okay.
Yep. Yeah, I was 19. And I knew at the time, I knew nothing would come of it. I knew he would not get in trouble. I knew he would not get arrested, nothing would happen to him, and that I would get a rainload of crap on my head. And I did. But I also knew that if he knew that I was on to him and that, you know, if I stuck the police up his butt, that he would never touch my sister. And so I did it anyway, because that my ultimate goal has always been to protect her.
See that. Do you think that he might have done anything to anybody else along the way?
I don't know. I have just kind of accepted that I will never get to know that. My sister, it's her story to tell, so I'm not going to speak for her.
Right.
But
yeah.
I have always wondered, because he is a high school teacher, you know, that was a big reason why I turned him in as well, was because I was afraid that he was would be doing things to his students. And my dad is also highly racist and bigoted, so there are many other lovelinesses about him, but I always and right now he unfortunately works at an all-girls school, so but there's unfortunately nothing I can do about that. So
right.
I did
what
I could to
protect
my sister, but you know there's not much I can do.
So you have you checked on the statute of limitations in the state?
I have, and I was already past it then, and I'm certainly past it now. I just turned 30 yesterday.
well, what I'm getting at, I don't know if you realize this or not, but you know now over half the states, okay, in the United States are abolished totally with the child abuse, okay. I was actually part of the Louisiana situation where we just got ours abolished totally with a 3-year window also. So you might want to recheck, because every state is now either abolishing it or they are putting amendments on, massive amendments on them. So you might want to double check if you're interested in doing that. I just wanted to let you know, because I'm highly on top of that. I'm on top of that situation. I just don't know specifically about your state, but you know it's not very hard to find.
Alabama tends to be
Alabama.
The last people that do things.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Alabama's not exactly the forefront of progress.
Yes, I understand you there. That's for sure. Oh wow, that's something else. You know, it really is.
But at the time, I would have had to pull charges on him in Montgomery, and they told me at the time that because he was in Virginia, there was never any jurisdiction because of how it happened and where everyone was at the time. So it was unfortunate, but.
Mm-hmm.
Such is the legal system of the United States.
Believe me, I lived through the same thing, the same exact thing, and I got to see the system fail, let me tell you what happened real quick was that, the guy that basically raped me, and I'll just come out and say it, at school, we turned him in, took him to court, had witnesses, and he still was acquitted, okay? Because it was a bench trial. And guess what?
Yep.
This guy he gets 26 kids after me. I was the first.
Yep.
26.
Yeah.
Can you believe it? I mean, that's just the saddest thing. You know, I feel, for the system, and the same with you,
It's just
we have to, make sure that we change this. So I would look into the statute, if you want to. Well, listen, I have a caller that's calling in that might want to ask you a question or a comment. Would you like to hear what they say? Okay. Let me find out who it is real quick. Okay. Hold on just a second, okay?
Hi.
Okay. Hi, Kathy. Well, you're on the air now.
Hey, Jude.
Hi.
I've always wanted to say that. That's so cool.
One of the reasons I picked my name. There you go.
Oh, that's just so cool. I was also raped by a lieutenant colonel, and I'm much older. I'm 70. This happened in 1970, so 52 years ago. And they lifted the statute of limitations. I confronted the whole family when Mama was 1 foot in the grave. And, yeah, it's quite interesting. But they did he's an Air Force. I don't know what your lieutenant person is. And I have only one transgender acquaintance, and one bully transgender pissed the shit out of me down at the health club. Oh, she got real bullied about it. But, you know, I would love to be able to talk to you. I know that my best friend I grew up with, who was my rock growing up, as a matter of fact, one of the things I remember her saying, we were about 9. She was born in August, I in October. Family grew up next to her. I've known her. She went to Catholic schools. I went to public schools, but we were there. Anyway, she sat out one big knockdown, drag-out hell fight in my house, and me and my sister go running out, and everybody's just yelling and screaming, and the whole neighborhood hears it. We were always – but she said, Kathy, look, you see those doors? And she's pointing at the front doors, and she said, same shit, different circumstances behind everyone. You know, and it kind of made you feel, well, you know, it happens all the time. But, no, I've been listening to a lot of your story that, you know, it's so remember that, and I'm sure for so many who listen, you know, we pick up, we relate things that happened to me. Mama, when I was getting beaten, she saw it, and I was beaten unconscious. Yeah. And while she screams in the background, I hope to God you kill her. Or right after I've been violently raped, you know, what a bitch. Anyway.
Yeah. Oh, my mom was very much like, she knew all of it was going on, but she just kind of imagined that it didn't.
It happened much earlier, too, and you were talking about it getting caught. And for the longest time, I thought he didn't do it again because he almost got caught. I came down and my clothes were not on properly. My tights were over top my leotard. You can only get naked and do that. And Mama mentioned it, and he looked panicked. And I realized it wasn't because of getting caught. It was because he was no longer in control of the game. I had a card, and he didn't, he was no longer, and it took a while. It wasn't panic as much as it's control. You know, it's the whole thing, because it was grooming.
Control.
I thought he must have started when I don't remember when it started. But it was about fourth grade when he got caught. Well, when he got, I covered for him too. Oh, Mom, no problem.
Oh, yeah.
I must have done it wrong when I was in the bathroom, you know, or whatever. And she wanted to believe that was the case, you know.
Yep.
She wanted to. So yeah, there's so much, and I listened to a lot of your story, and I can't help it because I'm so adamant about this pronoun crap. People are wanting to call me I don't care what they want to call me, but you know, it's just so it is just so non-consequential to the pain, whether you're white, black, trans, gay, straight, man, woman, you know, if you get raped, you go through the same damn whole trauma. You were talking about running, too, man. I took off. You know,
yeah.
I took off. I didn't stop for I didn't stop.
I used to literally run.
That's such a common factor with all of us. You know, that is, you know, it's just, we do not
want
to
get away
from
the anxiety. The anxiety was just boom. Keep on going.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
But, but yeah.
I literally drove
this,
across the country. And I always say, like, you can't see the situation when you are in the situation. You have to get out of it to see what it was.
Yeah.
Like that's why it's so hard to leave in the first place.
I think I was very fortunate.
That's your life.
As you were, and you mentioned so much your little sister, how much of a blessing and a rock she was for you to be able to have some sanity growing up through the whole thing. And I think that, you know, I was very fortunate also in having the opportunity to be able to step aside, step away, in spite of all the, as we say, which is a Greek way of saying just a bunch of bullshit. Okay, I forgot. We're supposed to be nice on the cuss words here. But, you know, I remember screaming, I think it, again, at around 9, 10, mm-hmm. I want to go to Florida because they weren't going to pack the car, big fight, big thing, you know. And then I remember saying every year, you know, and then I remember at 13, get a divorce, just get a divorce. And I was at that point figuring out how to get the hell out of that house. You know?
Yeah.
Right.
And so I did. Right. I got out of the house and rearranged my life. And this is your story, but I would love to talk to you again, Jude.
Yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
if you would be able to connect with me over there on NASCA, because, well, I only have Carolyn. She's down there, and she loves it that I call her she without Matt and I. And
yeah.
some people have said, oh, did you see the, and I'm going, no, you know. But the trainer pisses me. I think she's bullshit. I mean, there's a difference between sincere and authentic and wanting to play a stupid
exactly.
fucking game,
yep.
you know. And
yep.
that's what pisses me
yep.
off, you know, that's
mm-hmm.
all.
But you
and
know,
I
you
think
know
that
I do,
anybody
say,
who's
yeah.
sincere will understand what I mean, you know. I have to.
It's exactly
sure.
that. It's exactly
you know?
The point of being. It's exactly the point of being empathetic, you know,
and inauthentic. Yeah.
And that's the thing. And this is what I wanted to tell you, Kathy, because you called in. You know what a blessing.
You didn't. You know what? You did not. You did not give the phone number out. I bet there's other people that might want to call in.
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't hear it. I've been hearing her.
Yeah, I gave it out. I'm going to give it out again.
I was apprehensive to call in because I thought maybe you didn't want callers.
I would love to have callers call in.
No, we've been talking so much. But what I want to tell you is that when survivors get together and we start talking like we are, you know, it is so wonderful.
So powerful.
Because now we can express exactly what we went through. We understand what we went through.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I know that anyone
yep.
that's listening out there, you know, understands exactly what just happened, because you know,
well,
in
the real world,
people that connect.
In the
yeah.
real world,
and, I was
saying stuff to the real people that don't get it, and that's what my dear friend had to say because I was getting frustrated with all of her. I don't know what she was quoting the Bible or I don't know what she was doing, but she didn't get it. You know, look, you just don't get
right,
it. And,
right.
But I couldn't
oh,
say
so
that
well,
until
then,
my
too,
friend
the
said,
Bible
Kathy. She doesn't get it. Be grateful that she doesn't. And I guess I
yes.
can take solace
that
in that.
Say, I have a mm-hmm. friend who grew up in a similar situation and is also trans, and I always say, you know, I'm sorry that you understand and I wish you didn't, but I'm glad that someone understands and I have you in my life to understand. It's nice to be understood, but I'm sorry that you understand, you know.
Well,
mm-hmm.
we all have difficult things in our lives, you know. We really do. I know that it took me another thing that peaked, not that there aren't so many, but when my niece was going to move over there, she was 9, and it was his marital home. I had been left the country. I stayed so far from those people. It was walking on eggshells. Foolishly didn't cut them off totally until
mm-hmm.
3 years before Mama died, which was only a few years ago. So, but it was distant. But that's when I came out to Dad. That's when I came out to Dad. What?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry.
I'm no contact now. It's so good for my sanity.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. My brother had the audacity to call me on my birthday. I mean, and when
my mom tries to do that.
Well, the other brother.
My mom does the flying monkey thing, too. That
my other brother's the
flying
monkey. You got it.
Yep.
You got it. Yes.
She said,
she'll
have my sister get me a cake or whatnot and say it's from her just to,
oh, anyway,
just to throw herself
the,
in there.
The Air Force wouldn't have let him in, of course, because, you know, he just raped and beat his sister. But nonetheless, that's how I found out the statute was done. I was just going to show Mother, not that she
mm-hmm.
didn't need to know this, the waivers
mm-hmm.
and the mandatory reporting just from asking the local dude about a waiver. You know, because I was
mm-hmm.
raped by this Air Force guy, you know. He had to tell his sexual people. And I get a call from the South Carolina police. They lifted the statute of limitations on everything, including the physical assault, you know, which
mm-hmm.
was witnessed.
Yeah.
That's what,
and,
that's what happened here. In
and
the
they have a report on him.
Mm.
Yeah,
yeah,
I just filed
you know,
it 2 years ago. They're not doing anything. He kept Mama isolated until she died, you know, not surprisingly.
Mm-hmm.
But when she
right.
moved into
right.
his home, at, what, 89, 90, whatever she was, you know, 91.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. She died in 20 and, you know, a couple years ago. Anyway,
right.
I'm talking too much on your party here, honey.
That's okay,
hey,
Kathy.
Dude.
No, you
That's
are
okay,
fine.
Kathy.
I'm glad you called in.
I want to thank you. Yeah, thank you so much for calling in. You know, we really appreciate it. And she's got a good point with the statute of limitations because I'm going to tell you, I specifically work with that here in Louisiana, and we got it done too. You know, so I would check it deeply because, listen, I have people that now are getting justice and they're in their 50s, 60s, 40s, you know, and I work with these people every single day, and I love it. The joy that they're getting out of their lives, I'm telling
and
you.
And it's wonderful. I am now in for I love healing, and I'm not saying synergy with other survivors isn't really helpful. I love it. But also my passion is prevention and accountability because I'm sick and tired.
Right.
Yeah. How many times have these people, you and I, three of us here, you know, we got however many abusers, whatever, and we know we're a drop in the ocean, you know, and there are so many. And then I get the same thing. Did you do it to anybody else? You know, so that's my my issue, and I really don't like a lot of things. And I'd love to talk to you off air or separately because I think you're fascinating.
Yeah, y'all get in touch with each other. That's for sure.
Well, I don't know how to, so I'm just gonna have to give it. I'm just gonna have to, you know, I have to have you. You know, I guess I can hit your June M. Is that? Let me see where you are.
That's
LinkedIn page not found. You got no.
Yeah,
you got.
I think they're gonna update it after the show. It should
have
my website and my LinkedIn.
Okay, well, if you got a Facebook or anything or you know, say hello over there and I can message you over it, you know, whatever. I'd love to talk to you offline because I want to get personal. I have so many questions and I want to know, you know, how.
I'm also
anyway.
In the NASCA group on Facebook if you have Facebook.
Okay, good. Okay, I haven't seen anything from you. I post over there a lot, so I'll put something else up. I got the gender bread person up there, so you know you might want to chime in on that.
I love the gender bread person.
I hate the gender bread person.
It's not cute.
It's so obnoxious. It's for kids. That's my whole point. That's not good.
Yeah.
You know that is just setting them up for groomers. You know. That goes in. I want a little book that says Daddy doesn't train a toilet, and then you open it and said Mommy doesn't either. No one trains a damn toilet. We go in there and we clean our genitalia, and we know it's private. That's why we shut the door, you know. And just a different.
We're talking about different gender bread. The gender bread thing I was talking about was it's a little infographic to talk about gender identity and expression.
Right. I think it's the same thing. It's
people.
Over there on NASCA.
Yeah.
It's over there on NASCA.
I do like that one. It's really good for kids to be able to express themselves.
They should not be expressing themselves in school with a gender bread person. This is just inappropriate. That's my view. You know, I know that.
I've known I was trans since I was potty training, so and I didn't have language to talk about it until I was
now,
an adult.
My neighbor didn't talk about her being gay. She's gay, and she's been with her, you know, for years. But easily, I guess we, you know, parted ways when I took off from the country, I guess. But I knew, and then I saw her later. But in hindsight, the games we played, she was never inappropriate. I'm not saying anything of the sort. But, you know, all the stuff, it was clear, you know, where she stood. And I always thought I was just, you know, this is my life as a woman. As, you know, I've been reincarnated. You know, so here I am. But anyway.
I think it's good to give kids the vocabulary to talk about themselves and talk about what happens to them, you know. But,
right.
Well,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
It would be good, especially for someone, what it should be good for is for people to be accepting, and because if someone is having that struggling, but this is encouraging for people that don't and giving confusion where it shouldn't be. I mean, you weren't confused. You knew early on. Most trans people that I've heard and talked to from afar, you know, and read from, are well aware of that. So, but that certainly did not, it wouldn't have mattered whether you were trans or not trans for what happened to you, you know. That is, you know, just horrible. I would certainly hope that your family wasn't, you know, bumping you for
trans. My family has told me I'm mutilating myself, and it took them many years to get over the fact that I am a man and that I love women. So that's been a whole other thing. That was why I was disowned, was because I came out.
Oh, man, that's just that's a difficult thing.
Twice, actually.
And as you said, you know, it's difficult because that didn't happen to me, and I wasn't disowned for that. I disowned them, you know, really. Because they were
really
flying
honestly.
What?
Oh, I feel the same way. I don't, you know, I don't claim them anymore.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, like I said, I don't want to keep on talking, and we'll be in touch.
Well,
and
Kathy, thank you. Yeah, Kathy, thank you so much for calling.
Thank you for calling in.
I mean, it's so nice to hear your
thank
voice.
Thank you for being so open, too.
Amen.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
All righty.
Okay. Well, you have a good night.
I will.
You,
baby. Oh, bye-bye.
Okay.
Merry Christmas.
Right. Merry Christmas.
Same to you.
Yeah.
All right. Bye-bye. Yeah, she's something else, isn't she? She really is.
Yeah, that was awesome.
You know, we were talking, too, you know, about you were getting into some things, and we still got some stuff to talk about, but we have about 8 minutes left, okay? So...
Yeah.
You know, I know we were getting to, you know, the things about almost at the point where you were, you know, going to be with the things that happened with the ex, you know. I'm kind of anxious to hear about that. Can you get into that maybe?
Yeah.
Let
so
us know
that,
what happened there? Because
that was a whole thing in and of itself was in 2013, I ended up back at my parents' house. Just for financial reasons, and with being Mormon, they're very focused on, you know, get married and have babies, and so I was being pressed into being a straight Mormon woman and filling that role. I actually married a man I had only known for 30 days, and from the time I met him, we were married 30 days later. Just because of pressure from the church and from our families.
Mm-hmm.
And we lived in my parents' house for a couple of weeks, and then we actually moved back out to Idaho where I had lived before. And we got our own apartment, and my ex-husband would not work. He did not work. He did not hold a job, and he did not work ever. And so we took out a large amount of credit in terms of credit cards and furnishing our house and such because he expected that. So his mom had ruined his credit in various ways because of their situation. So that all went into my name. We furnished the house. He bought gaming systems and games and fancy headsets and whatever he wanted, he bought in my
name.
At first I held a job, but after a while he was very possessive and he didn't like me going anywhere. All of my time was to be spent with him. He raped me multiple times a day, most days. 296 times over the 6 months that we were married. And eventually he did not let me leave the house. So he essentially held me captive in our apartment in Idaho.
Uh-huh.
And it was actually Halloween night, I called the police from my bathroom because he would not let me out of my bathroom. And I got them to escort me out of my own house. I packed a bag and I went and stayed with a friend of mine for the night. And I sent him home and I told him if he didn't take the flight, he was getting home on his own. He took the flight. Smart man. He went home to his mom. And at that point, I ended up back at my parents' house. And he was stalking me because we were in the same town again. And I actually committed suicide. I literally died. I flatlined, and I spontaneously, my heart spontaneously restarted. But he literally, he would not work. He pulled my car from under me and got a red coupe for my Corolla, and he took out an $18,000 loan in my name for the car, and he was just very possessive, and I believe he was cheating, but that's another thing in and of itself. He was very jealous,
right.
And by the end of when we were in Idaho, I couldn't leave the house even to get groceries or anything. We would, you know, not have food in the house because he wouldn't let me leave, and he didn't go anywhere. He played his video games 24/7 and occasionally raped me, and, you know.
Yeah.
So eventually when we were both in the back in our hometown, he was stalking me so badly that I literally killed myself. And I woke up in the psych ward, and I did a lot of therapy, a lot. And then I was still in my parents' house, and they were very controlling as well. They controlled when and what I ate, when I slept, where I went, who I saw, who I talked to. I wasn't allowed to talk to my friends. I wasn't allowed to go anywhere. And eventually a friend of mine needed a nanny for her son. So I moved out of my parents' house, and I moved in with her, and she's a wonderful human being. She helped me figure out who I am in terms of my queerness.
Right.
She was actually the one who told me to ask out my now wife. So she's responsible for my wonderful new marriage. And I was able to find myself. I did DBT, which was super helpful for me because I have borderline personality disorder.
Okay.
And from there, I was able to become independent. I had doctors that told me I would never live alone. I would never marry, I would never finish school, I would never graduate, I would never take care of myself, and now they're wrong. I am independent, married happily, I have a master's, I'm actually going for a second master's now in psychology in the UK. Yeah, I'm excited.
All right, yeah, congratulations, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm so proud of you. I can't
tell
you enough how proud I am
of
you. You know, with everything you've been through, girl. Jake, what do you go by?
My name is Jude. I put Jake in the bio because I wasn't sure if I wanted to be anonymous or not at the time.
Okay. Well, you know, that's up to you. You know, it just is. Well, I have a question too, because you have been through so much different things in life. You know, we have a little bit over a minute left, and then I want you to maybe say something to the public. But what was your key in the therapy? What was your favorite therapy?
DBT. Because I grew up in such an abusive home, and I never knew anything else, I didn't know who I was. And I credit Carmen Griner was my DBT therapist. She's up in Virginia, and she – I guarantee you I would not be alive without her without therapy that she gave me. I did a DBT group, and it taught me how to handle emotions when I get them, and she taught me how to stay in the moment and not run from my emotions. Mm-hmm. She taught me how to live my life. I mean, I literally would not be here without her. And that's really, that's the message I want to relay as we end here is, like, you have a future. If you're listening to this and you're hearing this and you're going through all this crap, you have a future. You can be who you want to be, and you can get through this, and you can, you know, it takes work. It takes a lot of work. It's not easy, but you can find a life that is healthy and happy and awesome. And I know that sounds really cheesy, but I always thought it was crap, but it's not. It's wonderful.
And that is so beautiful, because after you do reach a certain point, that's exactly it. And the life that we have is a life of love and friendship when we meet each other like we did now. I will always
absolutely
be a friend, by the way, okay? And we have to end the show now. So I just want to thank you so much for tonight. It was a really, really good show. I enjoyed it so much. I really did.
Thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Okay. Okay. All right. Well, thank you. I'm have to end the show now. Have a good night.
All right. Take
and
care.
Thank you, everyone, for listening from NASCA. Good night.
Have a good night, y'all.